This week on the Docs to Dads podcast, I'm opening up my cupboard to share with you the over-the-counter medications that I keep on hand to help when my kids have that random fever or upset tummy to get them feeling better and avoid missing school or work when I can. We're dissecting the pediatrician's medicine cabinet this week on the Docs to Dads podcast. Hello and welcome to the Docs to Dads podcast, a health and wellness resource for any dad looking to actively engage with their health, the health of their children, and building a stronger, healthier community around their family. Each week, Dr. Scott, a board-certified pediatrician, will explore topics relevant to child health and how dads can be an active participant in their growth, development, and other issues that affect children and the whole family. Hi, welcome back to the Docs to Dads podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Grant. I'm so glad to have you in with me this week. And this week, I want to talk a little bit about a fairly common question that I get about what kinds of medications parents might think about having on hand to help with those random symptoms that come up. You know, it never fails, especially as you have more than one kid, that you're going to have just about every week something come up. There's going to be an upset tummy. There's going to be a random fever or pain or eczema flare-up or these kinds of things that come up here and there as a parent. Knowing what are the medications that are out there that are available over the counter that you can use, and some of the tips and tricks that I use with my kids as a pediatrician. And I thought the easiest way to do this might be to just open up my medicine cabinet and say, what are the medications that I have in here available, both either in case of not really emergency, but like medications maybe that we don't use that often, but also those medications that we kind of go back to over and over again for those little things that creep up and pop up along the way. And so today I want to just open up my medicine cabinet, kind of talk through the different medications that we use, some of the tips and tricks that I share with families along the way that hopefully you can use for your family as well. And then a couple of things that maybe I don't have in my medicine cabinet, but I know other families keep, and some of the advice that I sometimes give about those medications as well. But before we do that, first, I want to give a shout out to my wife, who had the genius idea for this episode. I've been kind of bouncing some ideas off of her lately for some different episode ideas, and kind of trying to come up with how to talk about some of these issues. And she's kind of the one that formalized this concept of like opening the medicine cabinet and kind of just talking about, you know, open a window into our day-to-day life and, you know, welcoming you into that. And so shout out to her for this episode idea. And also just want to ask a favor of you as a listener. The majority of folks who try out new podcasts do so as a result of a personal recommendation from somebody that they know and trust, a friend, a colleague, those kinds of things. So if you're listening to the Docs to Dads podcast, you're enjoying the kind of content that we're putting out there, working hard on these episodes, if you find one that you really like or speaks to you, it would really mean a lot to me if you would pass that along to a friend or a colleague at work that you know is also sort of on this parenting journey with us, who might benefit from the kind of content that I'm putting out there, trying to make your day-to-day parenting life just 3% easier. And if you can share that with somebody out there, that would mean a lot to me. Thank you very much. All right. So without further ado, let's open up the medicine cabinet. So a couple of rules for this episode. One is that everything here and everything that I have in my medicine cabinet is stuff that's readily available over the counter in the United States to purchase for families. So it's not something that I'm like using my connections as a doctor to get my hands on or anything like that. This is all stuff that should be readily available at your local supermarket or pharmacy that might come in useful for you. Now, some of these things are not the best medications available to solve the problems that you might be having with your kid. And so it still is important. And I'll talk about some specific cases as we go through to maintain communication with your pediatrician, have conversations with them, because there may be situations where the over-the-counter medication isn't quite going to cut and you need something different or stronger or whatever the case may be. The other is that just because the FDA has approved certain medications to be available over the counter, and I'm talking about how I'm using them in my home with my kids, does not necessarily mean that they're 100% safe for your kids. And so it's still important, again, to have those conversations with your pediatrician to make sure that it's safe for you to use these particular medications in your particular case, right? This podcast, it's at the end of every episode, but this is not intended as specific medical advice, but sort of just general information about these medications and other health topics to try to help give you a better idea of what kinds of questions to be able to ask when you go and talk to your own pediatrician. So just make sure that you're keeping in communication with your pediatrician anytime your child is sick and may need some kind of support. All right, let's jump into it. So the first medication on the list is acetaminophen. This is available in the United States under the brand name Tylenol, generally speaking. Although I'll say as sort of one additional disclaimer that for the vast majority of these medications, all of them really, I'm not making any kind of specific endorsement that you should use the brand name of any of these things. The majority of them, I think I can, as I'm looking through, there's only one that I can see on the list that I have the actual brand name version of, and that was only because that was the only thing that was available when I went to buy it. But the vast majority of these, using the store brand generic version of them, will get you all the way there, and there's really not very much additional in paying the additional cost of getting the brand name item. So I'm going to try to give you both the medication name and some of the common brand names that are available, just to help make it a little easier to understand what the medicine is that I'm talking about. But generally speaking, I don't buy brand name medications, and there's not very much additional benefit for most of these over-the-counter medications to using the brand name over the store brand generic style. All right, so back into acetaminophen / Tylenol. So acetaminophen is a medication that is used primarily for pain and fever. The nice thing about acetaminophen is that it is safe to use for kids, you know, from the moment of birth. It's been tested all the way down to include those little bitty babies. And so for your baby who's less than 6 months, as opposed to ibuprofen, which we'll talk about in a minute, Tylenol is going to be your medication of choice for pain and fever in those situations. Now, this does not replace the recommendation that any baby less than 30 days at a minimum, and generally less than 3 months, that has a fever should get some kind of medical attention, right? So less than 30 days, we recommend kids go immediately to the emergency room to get a full evaluation, because those kids are at really high risk of significant infections. And less than 3 months, you want to make sure that you're getting some kind of medical advice and evaluation to make sure that there's not something more severe going on. But in the event that you need to bring a fever down, in these young kids, either in the hospital setting where I used to work, or as kids get older in the home environment, Tylenol is going to be the thing that's available to you to bring that fever down. You also want to be careful using this medication for quote unquote pain or discomfort in these younger ages, because you want to make sure that you're not masking a fever that does need some additional medical evaluation. And so even in the situation, say, where I'm doing circumcisions on babies in the clinic, sometimes those babies have pain or it interferes with their feeding, the discomfort that they're having. And so we'll say it's okay to use one dose of Tylenol for those babies, but we want you to check and make sure they don't have a fever before you give it, and monitor them closely to make sure that nothing else seems to be amiss in case they do need to get evaluated. Obviously, those babies are generally less than 2 weeks old, so we're particularly worried about giving them acetaminophen and masking a fever or masking some kind of infection. So most babies who have that procedure done don't require a dose of Tylenol afterwards, but every once in a while there'll be one that does need it. And even in those situations, we take those particular precautions. And then as kids get older, you can use acetaminophen in addition to ibuprofen, which we'll talk about in a minute, for all kinds of pain and fever type situations. The big tip that I usually give, especially related to the little bitties, for the use of acetaminophen, or for parents specifically, the purchasing of acetaminophen, is that while there is, when you go to the store and look, there is infant Tylenol and children's Tylenol, the concentration of those medications is the same. So it's basically the same stuff that's in those two different bottles. The main difference is that with infant Tylenol, it has a special cap on the top that you can stick that fancy yellow syringe in to pull the medication out, and you get that lovely yellow syringe alongside. And in children's Tylenol, it usually has a medicine cup that you would like pour the medication out into with either an open bottle or with a little squeeze top, depending on the type that you buy. And the thing to know about that is the infant's Tylenol is significantly more expensive than the children's Tylenol. I just checked actually Costco prices, because this is my favorite type of story to tell. So when you go to Costco, you can go and you can get two-ounce bottles of infant Tylenol for $12.50 as of recording this podcast this morning. Or right next to it, you can get 3 4-ounce bottles. So that's three times as much for $19. And the primary difference is that you just don't get any of those fancy yellow syringes. So if you buy the infant Tylenol the first time, so you get that yellow syringe, it's this like classic yellow. You'll know when you buy it, or you know, if you know, you know. And then after that, you can just buy the bigger bottles at a much lower price, dump it into the cup, and then use the syringe to pull the medication out from the cup directly. And it's the same stuff. So there's no need to pay the markup for something labeled as infant when it's basically the same concentration, the same stuff that's in there. And you don't need any more of those fancy yellow syringes. Which brings us next to ibuprofen, which again in the United States is marketed under trade names like Motrin and Advil. Ibuprofen similarly can be used to help with pain and fever. Those are kind of its two primary indications. The thing to know about ibuprofen is that it can't be used on kids less than 6 months of age. You have sort of exclusively use of acetaminophen prior to age 6 months. And then after 6 months, you can use both acetaminophen and ibuprofen. Some of the nice things about ibuprofen is it does tend to have a little bit more of an anti-inflammatory component to it as compared to the Tylenol, which kind of targets specifically the pain and fever pathways. The ibuprofen can do a little bit more with anti-inflammatory components. And so that helps specifically in younger kids with things like teething and those kinds of things where there's these big inflammation that's happening. I find that ibuprofen tends to work better for those types of situations. And the other nice thing is that it lasts a little bit longer. So while acetaminophen commonly can be dosed about every 4 hours, ibuprofen doesn't need to be dosed, but usually about every 6 hours. And it may not seem like those couple of hours make a big difference, but when those 2 hours are in the middle of the night, you're getting that little bit more sleep, it can make a big difference. So that's the other nice thing about ibuprofen, is that it tends to hang around a little longer and have that little bit longer effect. And then ibuprofen can also be really helpful in situations like in older kids, if they get injured and have some swelling at a site of an injury, the ibuprofen, that anti-inflammatory component, can sometimes help with that as well. Again, those might also be situations where you want a formal pediatrician's recommendation, either in an emergency room setting or at your local PCP's office. So keep that in mind as well. But those are the kinds of situations where ibuprofen can be helpful. The major downside in my mind of ibuprofen is, as compared to acetaminophen, where infant and children's acetaminophen comes in the same concentration, for some reason, infant ibuprofen and children's ibuprofen are two different concentrations. And so it's really important to be mindful of which product you're using and what that concentration is, because even the way it's printed on the box, in my mind, is confusing to me, and is a common source of sort of misdosing children with the ibuprofen. And so I generally recommend that folks, again, especially since it saves you some money as well, and you've already got the fancy yellow syringe from the acetaminophen that you bought, to just buy the children's Motrin or the children's ibuprofen and use that, because it's the dosing of that is more or less equivalent with the dosing for acetaminophen in terms of volume. And so it's that children's Tylenol level that you can use also, generally speaking, to dose the children's ibuprofen as well, as opposed to the infant Motrin or infant ibuprofen, which is doubly concentrated. And so you use half as much volume. And I just find that that gets a little bit confusing. So I try to stick with the children's ibuprofen concentration when I'm dosing, but I have to have that conversation frequently at the 6-month visit to say, when you start to introduce ibuprofen for whatever reason that might come up, these are the things that you need to be aware of. And this concentration issue is the biggest one, because you do not want to accidentally overdose your kid on ibuprofen. It gets processed by the kidneys. You don't want to cause that kind of trouble with the kidneys. And so just being aware of like what's the concentration and exactly how much should I be giving can be a little bit challenging. All right. So that finishes up the sort of pain and fever, the big two. These are probably the two medications that you use most frequently, unless you have a kid who goes in this next category, which are the allergy medications, which I do have at least one and maybe a second one who's emerging now. So we're going to talk a little bit about allergy medications next that I have on hand. And so the next big one that I want to talk about is cetirizine, which goes under the trade name Zyrtec here in the United States. This, for most pediatricians out there, especially pediatricians of my generation, this is the medication that we were trained as sort of replacing Benadryl. So where your parents may have had Benadryl on hand for those like little allergic rashes and skin flare-ups and allergy symptoms in the spring and the fall and those kinds of things, now we're primarily using Zyrtec in that role. There are other medications that are in the same class as cetirizine. Primarily for kids, you're talking about loratadine, which goes under the trade name Claritin. And then for older kids, there's also Allegra, which is fexofenadine. But for little kids in particular, primarily you're going to be using either cetirizine or loratadine. And I'm opening my medicine cabinet. So what I have in my medicine cabinet is Zyrtec. And so that's what we use for my oldest in particular. It has, in the spring in particular, some allergy symptoms. We were hoping that those would get a little better with our move from Michigan to Arizona. It doesn't look like that's happening for us. So we've been needing to use that. The nice thing about the Zyrtec and Claritin as it compares to the Benadryl is that it has been shown to work just as quickly, but it lasts a little bit longer and tends to have fewer side effects, especially those like sedation side effects, as well as kind of the goofiness side effects that some kids get with Benadryl. That's why for most of us, we're sort of transitioning from the use of Benadryl to the use of Zyrtec. Benadryl is still just as safe to use as it always has been. So it's fine in an emergency if that's all you have on hand to use. But most of us are making that transition over. And every allergist that I've talked to in the last 5 years about this issue, all of them are also changing this recommendation to be using something like Zyrtec or Claritin instead of Benadryl for these allergy flare-ups. The nice thing about it is these medications are generally safe to use on a daily basis for seasonal allergy symptom controls, but also work quickly and effectively in the situation where maybe your kid doesn't have daily symptoms, but they went over to a friend's house and they have a cat and they're allergic to the cat, or the grass is starting to bloom and they went out and rolled around in the yard and now they have like a little allergic skin rash or something like that. The Zyrtec can be used for that. The other really good use for Zyrtec is itching control. So sometimes when kids have different kinds of like particularly itchy viral rashes, or a lot of times it's also these allergic processes. You know, they're allergic to something that gives them a little rash on the skin and it's very itchy. Zyrtec can be used to help with that as well. And so that's the primary uses that we have for that medication. Up next, especially for kids who have nasal symptoms with their allergies, is a nasal steroid of some kind. So these go under a variety of names. The most common is a product that uses the steroid fluticasone, and is goes by the trade name Flonase, but there are also other products. Nasacort is another one, and there are a couple of others. Again, within this category of medications that you'll find at the pharmacy, there's no real reason to pick one over the other. There's also no reason, again, to use brand name versions of most of these medications. So these medications are primarily used to control allergy symptoms again, and in some kids who will allow you to do a nasal spray, which isn't always the easiest sell for some of these young kids, but in a good number of kids, you can get pretty good allergy control with just the nasal spray, which is nice because it's doing something more locally in the nose and the pharynx, rather than giving a medication that absorbs more systemically and might have a higher risk of side effects and those kinds of things. Again, those allergy medications that we just finished talking about, again, are safe for use in most kids. But a lot of parents I know, and myself included, would generally prefer to do something locally with something like a nose spray or a skin cream rather than give something that the kid has to take and gets absorbed throughout the whole body just to help with a little skin rash or a runny nose or something like that. For some folks, and this is true of my allergies as well, generally speaking, just using the nasal steroid spray can get close to 100% control of those allergy symptoms. But some kids need a combination of nasal spray. And then if it gets pretty bad, you know, adding on the allergy medication or vice versa, maybe you're using the allergy medication more consistently. But especially when those nose symptoms, the runny nose and those kinds of things get a little bit out of hand, using that nasal spray can sometimes help with those as well. And this I wanted to make sure I included in this episode because right now in March of 2024, I'm seeing a ton of kids in my clinic who are coming in with this sort of lingering cough, this lingering runny nose. And especially as we're coming out of winter, a lot of parents are concerned that this is, you know, a cold that just won't go away or something like that. But a lot of times, you know, we're seeing warmer weathers already here in Arizona, so it's already starting to get a little warmer. Our there's a little allergic cough in the background for you from one of my kids. We're working on that, and so parents are worried about this being some sort of lingering infection. But a lot of times, those kids look good, their appetite's good, their energy's good. It's just that they have this runny nose and this cough that gets a little bit worse at night. And for a lot of those kids, opening the door to a conversation about, like, could this be some kind of seasonal allergies because the plants and trees are already starting to bloom is something that's really important for right now. So if you find yourself in that situation, it might be worth having a conversation with your pediatrician of, like, maybe this isn't some kind of infection. Maybe this is an allergy of some kind, and it's just during this time of year that the symptoms tend to get bad enough that they manifest with some runny nose or some cough or those kinds of things. Maybe having that conversation with your pediatrician is a wise path forward. And so that's why the allergy medication, I think, is useful to include both an allergy medication that you take by mouth, like a Claritin or a Zyrtec, and then also a nasal spray. Again, if your kid has allergy symptoms, right? So this isn't necessarily to say this, the whole point of this episode, as we kind of come to the end of part one here, is not to say that you need all of these medications in your medicine cabinet, but it is to say, like, these are the medications that are in my medicine cabinet for the kids that I have and the medical challenges that we sometimes run into. I know that these are common issues that a lot of kids out there have. And so I'm hopeful that this is helpful to you to kind of hear my take on some of these medications and how we use them. And it's not necessarily to say that you need to go out and buy all of these things. If you have, you know, if you're in the situation maybe where you're expecting your first kid, like, you did not need to run out and go buy all of these medications to have them immediately available as soon as your kid gets home from the hospital. The only thing that you might want to run out and get is a little bit of Tylenol to have on hand. But again, in those first 30 days, you're not going to be given Tylenol at home anyway. You're going to be going in to seek medical care. So even that is not a rush. So most of these medications, you're not going to need, you know, from day to day. But having these medications on hand to be able to use hopefully will be helpful to you. And as a final thought to summarize the allergy section, the way that I tend to recommend that folks use these allergy medications is, if you're going to use it once a day, which is the recommendation for the Claritin or the Zyrtec, is to use those more in the evening time, because so many kids have that post-nasal drip that causes them to cough when they lay down at night and can cause them to cough through the night. A lot of times using those medications in the evenings can help kids sleep a little bit better, which helps parents sleep a little bit better, helps them be set up for success in the morning. And then if you need it, you can use the nasal sprays in the morning to kind of help them get through the day. The other option that's available is to take the total daily dose that's recommended for the allergy medication and split it in half and do it twice a day, although you're going to not quite get the same effect as you would if you were giving it all at the same time. That's one way to do it. Again, you can give that medication once a day, pretty much whenever you want to. I tend to recommend that you do it in the evening with dinner time, just to kind of help that overnight situation, like I mentioned, but your mileage may vary and you can do it in a variety of different ways. And other pediatricians might have different recommendations for different reasons. That's just the thing that I have found is most successful for me and my kids and for the families that I serve. And so that's going to bring us to the end of part one of this episode. I got a lot more to say about some other medications that I have in my medicine cabinet. So part two is going to primarily focus on GI stuff. So the upset tummy, the trouble going to the bathroom, the stomach flu that I know we're starting to see in different parts of the country, and then skin stuff like creams and lotions and those kinds of things that can sometimes be helpful when kids have flare-ups of eczema and those kinds of things. So come back next week. We're going to talk a little bit about all of those things and then do some more general summarizing about maybe things that aren't in my medicine cabinet, but that you might think about having in yours in different situations. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to this episode today, and I hope that you took something away from it. If you have questions about anything that we talked about today, I'd love to hear from you. You can find me on LinkedIn or Instagram. On LinkedIn, just search my name, Dr. Scott Grant. On Instagram, you can find me at docs2dadspod. I'd love to engage with you there as well. Or shoot me an email, docs2dadspod@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you and engage in some dialogue there as well. I want to say thanks, as always, to Phil Raban for editing the shows, putting them together so I can get them out to you every week. And I want to remind you to join us next week for part two of the Pediatrician's Medicine Cabinet. Until then, remember that what you do as a dad matters. Keep building healthier dads, happier kids, and stronger communities. Thanks so much.
The information included in this podcast and other Docs to Dads platforms is intended for your education and entertainment only. It is not intended as medical advice and should not replace a relationship with a primary care pediatrician or other provider who will give the most appropriate recommendations for your individual situation.
Thanks for listening.